Welcome to the AM Jackson Podcast with your host, Mark Daly. News, sports, and conversations that are important to Jackson County. This is the AM Jackson Podcast.
Local Jackson news now from the WKHM.com News Center.
Good morning. 5 minutes after the top of the hour, reporting with WKHM News, I'm Mark Daly. Fire crews responded to an apartment fire in Jackson last night. Multiple engines were called to Reed Manor near Michigan and Wildwood Avenue. Witnesses reported seeing more than a dozen emergency vehicles surrounding the complex as firefighters worked to control the blaze. Fire crews were seen spraying water on the building while residents and onlookers gathered nearby. Officials say residents were evacuated from the building around 9:30 last night, though it's not yet clear how many people were inside when the fire started. Authorities have not reported any injuries, and the cause of the fire remains under investigation. More information is expected as the investigation continues. Jackson County authorities are still on the lookout for two suspects in a February Hanover-Horton area armed robbery. Luke Moorhead has more details from the sheriff's office.
Following the apprehension and arraignment of four suspects involved in a February 24th armed robbery in the Hanover-Horton area, the Jackson County Sheriff's Office has released photographs of two remaining individuals sought by law enforcement in relation to the incident. The sheriff's office is officially requesting the public's assistance in locating Richie Jimenez and James Goodall. Both men are wanted on high-priority felony warrants for armed robbery, larceny from a building, and larceny of firearms. Anyone who sees these individuals or has information regarding their current location is asked to contact the Jackson County Office of the Sheriff at 517-768-7900 or your local law enforcement agency. The Sheriff's Office says these individuals should be considered dangerous and advises to not attempt to contact or apprehend them yourself. Photographs of the wanted suspects can be found on WKHM.com. Reporting with WKHM, I'm Luke Moorhead.
Local, state, and federal authorities are trying to learn more about a man who drove a truck into Temple Israel in West Bloomfield Township Thursday afternoon. He has been identified as 41-year-old Aman Mohammed Ghazali, a naturalized citizen born in Lebanon. Ghazali came to the U.S. in 2011 on an immigrant visa as the spouse of a U.S. citizen and was granted U.S. citizenship in 2016. He hit a security guard before he was shot and killed. The truck caught fire and sent smoke billowing throughout the building. Oakland County Sheriff Mike Bouchard says it will take time before a motive is known.
All of us have thoughts of maybe why this happened, but we don't operate in a world where we can presume something. We have to determine it through investigation and specificity. And that is a work that's in progress as we speak. All of us will work seamlessly together to get the answers, and then it will be called what it is. Obviously, it's a hateful, terrible thing.
Bouchard also said there were about 30 first responders who were taken to the hospital. The FBI is leading the investigation. The head of the FBI in Detroit called the attack a targeted act of violence against the Jewish community. Leaders from Metro Detroit's Jewish community are reacting to the Temple Israel attack. Temple Israel Rabbi Ariana Gordon says, while there are still many unknowns, there are things to be thankful for.
What I do want to say is a huge thank you to our law enforcement, to our Temple Israel security team, and to our early childhood center teachers who were the true rock stars of the day. They ensured that all of our children remained safe and calm throughout the entire day and got every single child safely reunited with their parents this afternoon. And for that, I can't express my gratitude enough.
Jewish Federation of Detroit CEO Stephen Ingber says the community will get through this together and stronger than before. Leaders at the Temple Israel in Metro Detroit have put out a statement yesterday afternoon that says everyone is safe. It says that all 140 students there, staff, teachers, and their heroic security personnel are all accounted for. The statement goes on to say Temple Israel was a victim of a terrorist gunman who was confronted and neutralized by their security personnel, who are truly heroes. President Donald Trump commented on the attack.
Before we begin, I want to send our love to the Michigan Jewish community and all of the people in Detroit, the Detroit area, following the attack on the Jewish synagogue early today. And I've been briefed, fully briefed. and it's a terrible thing, but it goes on. We're going to be right down to the bottom of it. It's absolutely incredible that things like this happen.
The person drove his truck into the building before being confronted by security and was eliminated. Authorities in Hillsdale County are working to identify a person killed in a crash Wednesday night in Somerset Township. Hillsdale County Sheriff's Office says a 2018 Buick Encore was traveling west on East Chicago Road near Baker Road around 8 o'clock when the vehicle left the roadway, struck a tree, and caught fire. Firefighters from Somerset Township Fire Department responded and were able to extinguish the flames. An unidentified person was found inside the vehicle. Officials are now working with the Lenawee Hillsdale County Medical Examiner's Office to confirm the victim's identity. Cause of the crash remains under investigation. Assisting at the scene were the Somerset Township Fire Department, Somerset Township EMS, and the Michigan State Police. A victory lap celebration was held for Jackson High School cross-country and track coach Nathan Martin after he earned a first-place finish at the 41st LA Marathon. It was a historic win for Martin as he won by 100th of a second, making it the closest ever finish in LA Marathon history. That kind of finish is not possible without a tremendous amount of work over the course of a 26.2-mile event, something that one of his students he coaches says helps with their mentality during races.
Yeah, it just really shows us that you never give up and anything can happen. You really just have to run the whole race and have a good mentality to really just finish the whole race.
JPS Superintendent Jeremy Patterson read a resolution from the district to honor the achievement.
Whereas Nate Barton, 36-year-old head coach, Jackson High School, achieved an extraordinary athletic achievement by winning the 41st Los Angeles Marathon on March 8th. I think you'll remember that date forever. Coach Byron completed the 26.2-mile race in 2 hours, 11 minutes, and 18 seconds. Not a second to spare. The closest finish in a Los Angeles marathon ever. Whereas this historic event made him the first U.S. black male to win the Los Angeles Marathon and the second American champion since 1994. His achievement brings great pride to Jackson High School, the Jackson community, and the Viking family. Demonstrating his greatness can be achieved through hard work, determination, and self-belief.
Martin was also presented with recognitions from the state of Michigan by representatives of State Senator Sue Schenck and State Representative Kathy Schmaltz. Students and staff then lined the hallways throughout 3 floors of Jackson High School to join the celebration as Martin was led by the Jackson High School drum line. Nathan said the event was an amazing opportunity to be a part of and that he was glad to be able to share it with all who are there. Community leaders and residents gathered Thursday at the Commonwealth Commerce Center for Jackson's 3rd annual State of the Community event. The meeting highlighted progress across the city and county while looking ahead to the new Drive Jackson 20-year vision plan. Leaders also discussed several projects expected to move forward in 2026, including a grocery store in Jackson Southside and redevelopment of the Hayes Hotel downtown. City Manager Jonathan Green said the Jackson community is strong and collaboration will only make us stronger.
The state of our community is strong, and with the people and energy in this room, I know it's getting stronger. Jackson, the city of, and Jackson County, our general community is doing well. If we stick together, we can make it better. The next year is all about working together to solve the problems, the growing challenges that we have today. I think it's becoming clear to everybody that what we face on a daily basis and the challenges that come our way are evolving at such a pace that we alone aren't able to tackle those. We need to work together. And so no matter what comes our way next year, the only way we're going to get through it is by working together.
County officials say continued growth will depend on strong partnerships between government and the private sector, which helps fund many local development efforts. County Administrator Mike Overton highlighted some of the projects the county has on the horizon and also commented on the strength of our community.
Strategic plan, I'm going to talk about that first. Then I'm going to talk about the dog park that we're going to be putting in at Vandercook. And then we have another exciting opportunity for anyone who likes to work with their hands, maybe mechanically inclined. We're going to start a aviation technician school at the airport, which would be great. Those are great jobs. And think about a young person in high school as a junior can start the program, and when they graduate as a senior, they already are qualified to go work for starting pay like around $50,000 as an aviation technician, basically an aviation mechanic. So we're pretty excited about that program. Our community is very strong. In fact, I would say we're really running on all cylinders right now. You look at what Accelerate Jackson is doing. You look at the Drive Jackson campaign, the 100 Homes campaign. I mean, what's going on at our airport, what's going on with our parks, what's going on. I mean, it's just that type of momentum in our community right now.
Leaders say future priorities include deeper collaboration with businesses and schools, along with exploring new technologies like artificial intelligence to support operations and education. The Harold Sheffer Music Hall and the Jackson College Potter Center will be hosting Menopause the Musical 2 this evening. Stacey Harris, one of the musical's actresses, talked about how the songs will sound familiar from the 70s, 80s, and 90s, but will feature a twist.
It really is a super fun show filled with songs that people know and love. They are parodied hits from the 70s, 80s, and 90s. It might be songs that as soon as it starts, people think, I know this song. But then they will laugh along with us because the words have been changed to reflect some of the things that people are going through as they get to their older years, whether it's women or men, because the men experience it too, since they're going through menopause along with their wives or their sisters or their mothers or their friends, and they get to learn a little bit more about what their ladies are going through.
While the sequel musical has the same characters as the first one, you don't have to have seen the original to get caught up on the details.
This is 5 years later, and it is the same four characters. The characters are Soap Star. That's me. I play the Soap Star. There's Iowa Housewife, Earth Mother, Professional Woman. So it's sort of archetypes so that our audiences can relate to these characters. They might see themselves a little bit more in one or in the other, or maybe a sprinkle of each of the characters in themselves, in their friends, in their moms, their sisters, and their wives. And it really is a great time. By the end, people are up on their feet, singing and dancing along with us. So you'll laugh. You might shed a few tears because there are some tender moments too. But the most important thing is that you'll celebrate the power of sisterhood and the power of friendship and how your friends will get you through anything.
While the majority of the musical is catered toward the ladies in attendance, there's a little bit of everything for everyone during the show.
We do have some men in our audiences, and even though it is a super fun girls' night out, we also see a lot of husbands and wives. We see guys, and they get it, too. By the end, they're cheering along, too, and sometimes if we happen to see some of the men afterwards, they go, I get it now. They really get what their ladies are going through and have a great time, because they know these songs, too. Most people do when you hear these songs from the 70s, 80s, and 90s that you grew up loving, and to see them in a new way, it really is a lot of fun for everyone.
Ticket information for this evening's showing of Menopause the Musical 2 at the Potter Center can be found on the events section of the Jackson College website. Consumers Energy is getting ready for another round of severe weather expected to hit Michigan this weekend. The utility says about 450 crews are being staged across the state as forecasters call for snow, strong winds, and possible freezing rain beginning Friday and continuing into early next week. The new system comes just days after storms brought high winds and rain that caused scattered power outages. Consumers Energy says crews are already positioned so they can respond quickly if the new storm knocks out power. The forecast calls for 3 to 6 inches of snow north of US 10, with 1 to 2 inches to the south, along with wind gusts that could reach 65 miles per hour. Freezing rain is also possible Sunday, with more rain and wintry mix expected Monday. Customers are encouraged to charge electronics, prepare emergency kits, and stay at least 25 feet away from any downed power lines. More outage updates and safety tips are available at consumersenergy.com. Officials say it's going to take more time and money to help the state recover from that terrible ice storm 1 year ago that damaged 3 million acres of forest land in northern Michigan.
The Michigan Natural Resources Commission says the price tag for the cleanup and reforestation work is expected to be $16.2 million. Jason Stevens is Assistant Chief of the Forest Resources Division.
Beyond just the red pine and jack pine, we'll also be doing work within the northern hardwood and oak resources, looking for restoration of functional, resilient forests there, and looking for scalable solutions that we can use to help the forests recover overall.
State officials say President Trump has also pledged more federal funds to help in Michigan's recovery from that devastating ice storm.
I'm Greg Bowman for the Michigan News Network.
Concussions for college athletes may have worse long-term effects than people believe. A new study in the journal Neurology suggests that college athletes that have three or more concussions can have significantly worse brain health 5 years after playing. A doctoral candidate from the University of Medicine helped conduct the study. They say the study is unique because it looks at people in their 20s. Many other studies that look at the impact concussions have on college athletes examine people in their 50s or 60s. Look for new coins to celebrate America's birthday.
Don't overlook this pocket change. It'll soon be in circulation to mark the nation's 250th anniversary.
I think we all should be celebrating such an important milestone.
That's Paul Hollis, director of the United States Mint.
There's a new dime that's out. There's going to be five new quarters that are going to produce this year and this year only. And then an amazing half dollar with the portrait of Lady Liberty, the Statue of Liberty, that looks just magnificent.
He says the coins have been shipped to Federal Reserve banks who then supply them to other banks across the nation, also retailers. And by July 4th, he's hoping most Americans will have seen a few examples of these new coins. You can get a look at them at usmint.gov. Ryan Recker for the Michigan News Network.
It's Friday, and it's the 13th day of March. And today we celebrate National Open and Umbrella Indoors Day. It's bad luck. Do not do that on Friday the 13th. Not saying, just saying. It's also Ken Day, National Canine Veterans Day, National Jewel Day, and National Good Samaritan Day. Come on, that should be every day. It was on this date in 1639. Harvard University was named for clergyman John Harvard. It's on this date in 1852. Uncle Sam made his debut as a cartoon character in the New York Lantern. On this date in 1965, Eric Clapton quit the Yardbirds. He was replaced by Jeff Beck. On this date in 1969, the Apollo 9 astronauts returned to Earth after the conclusion of a mission that included the successful testing of the lunar module. On this date in 1987, Bob Seger and the Silver Bullet Band received a star on the Hollywood Walk of Fame. On this date in 1996, a gunman walked into an elementary school and killed 16 children in Dublin, Scotland. On this date in 2010, former U.S. Secretary of State Henry Kissinger was hospitalized in South Korea for a stomach virus. On this date in 2013, Pope Francis was elected in the papal conclave to succeed Pope Benedict. It was on this date in 2014, Captain America, the Winter Soldier, premiered in L.A. On this date in 2016, a suicide bombing in Turkey killed 37 people. It was on this date in 2022. After a 40-day retirement, record-breaking quarterback Tom Brady announced he would play at least one more season in the NFL with the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. Birthdays today include George McKay, 34 today, actor from 1917, also The Beast. You have Harry Melling is 37, actor from the Harry Potter franchise, also in The Queen's Gambit. Noel Fisher, 42, actor, Shameless, Max Keeble's Big Move. Annabeth Gish, 55, actress from The West Wing, The X-Files, Sons of Anarchy. Tracy Wells is 55 from Mr. Belvedere. Dana Delaney is 70 today, actress from China Beach, Body of Proof. Robin Duke, 72, comedian, actress, Saturday Night Live. William H. Macy is 76 today, also from Shameless, also from Boogie Nights, also from Fargo. Yeah, he's one of my favorite actors.
What a conniving, nasty little genius. Here, I thought she was a straight shooter. This requires real craft. I feel deep love for her.
Jack Harlow has a birthday today. He is 28. You have Common. Singer, actor, loved him. Loved him in Hell on Wheels. Common, 54 today. Adam Clayton, bassist for U2, is 66. Mike Stoller, songwriter. He did Hound Dog. He did Jailhouse Rock. He is 93 today. And Neil Sedaka would have had a birthday today. He passed away earlier this year.
Don't take your love away from me. Don't you leave my heart in misery. If you go, then I'll be blue. 'Cause breaking up is hard to do.
For more local stories, breaking news, and interviews with Jackson's newsmakers, visit us online at WKHM.com. I'm Mark Daly.
Think of all that we've been through, and breaking up is hard to do. They say that breaking up is hard to do.
I'm Mark Daly, and you're listening to the AM Jackson Podcast.
Back to AM Jackson on WKHM, Jackson's News Talk 970 AM and 101.5 FM.
All right, Kettlebell Hotspot Sport and Fitness Center bringing us this look at our sports on News Talk 970 AM, 101.5 FM. It's where your functional fitness begins, improving your strength, balance, and mobility. So wherever you are in your physical fitness journey, they have a spot for you, Kettlebell Hotspot. They have their 6 a.m. class going on right now. Can't make that. They've got an 8 o'clock class Monday, Wednesday, Friday. Maybe you can check in with us for the Saturday morning circuit tomorrow, 9 a.m. It's a lot of fun. Usually pretty well attended, too. Kettlebell Hotspot, 7851 Spring Arbor Road on Facebook and online, kettlebellhotspot.com. All right, to the sports we go, where last night it was the Concord Yellow Jackets defeating Wyoming Tri-Unity Christian 50-40 in overtime, and Concord advances to the state final in Division IV basketball. Concord looked to control early, leading by 16 heading into the third quarter, but Tri-Unity Christian rallied, tied the game with a three-point buzzer beater to force overtime. You know, we've got highlights. Let's go to the first quarter. Concord's Connor Stevens gets a bucket. The Yellow Jackets up 8-3.
Garrett deep on the wing, top of the key. Rundle floats it down to Stevens, deep, and he's going to score at Connor Stevens point blank. And they don't have any answer for that down there, I don't think, Brian.
No, Osman has given up some size and strength.
On to the second quarter. Jet Smith gets a layup. Yellow Jackets up 27-13.
Stevens and Stevens on the floor for Concord. Back cut, Smith into the air. Scores it past the defender, and a great play out of the timeout. 27-13.
Daryl Dean Jr. in the third quarter drains it. 31-18 Yellow Jackets.
Concord sets up the half court. Dean Jr. gets a step, scoops at the basket. Layup Concord. They're on the board here, and they lead 31-18. 5:02 to play first, second half. Third quarter, rather.
Big bucket. As Concord was stalled out.
All right, so they rally. Tri-Unity Christian rallies, and they tie it up at the end of regulation. Here is Cody Osborn and his three.
3 seconds, crosses across the lane. 1 second, top of the key, three. He got it. We're tied. 38-38. They counted it.
Boy.
They haven't put it on the scoreboard yet, but unbelievable turn of events here. We're tied at 38 at the end of regulation.
In the extra period, brothers Connor and Zach Stevens took over, scoring the first 7 points for the Yellow Jackets to seal the win. Here's one of those OT scores from Connor Stevens. Puts the Yellow Jackets up 41-40.
No, goal one-on-one. Crosses, double team. Drops it off for Zach Stevens. He leaves it short. Connor rebounds. Puts it back up. Got it. Bucket Concord. Connor Stevens with the rebound and putback. 41-40 Concord.
And then they would never look back as Concord wins it 50-40. Here's the final call.
The buzzer sounds and Concord's going to the state championship for the first time in school history. 50-40, our final.
Connor Stevens finished with 16 points, 9 boards. Zach Stevens added 9 points, 8 boards. Jet Smith chipped in 11. Yellow Jackets now move on. Division 4 state championship game against Detroit Douglas Hurricanes. Saturday morning, 10 a.m. at the Brez. Wow. What a season for Concord and the ladies for Concord doing well, too. We'll talk more about them next week. Let's run down the rest of high school basketball in division action, quarterfinal to semifinal to final action. So it's going to be Concord versus Detroit Douglas. Now, looking at these records, Detroit Douglas 21-7 on the season, Concord 24-4. Again, 10 a.m. tip time. Our broadcast Saturday is going to be right here at 9:45 on Saturday on News Talk 970 AM, 101.5 FM. Other games. Division 2, that state final is set. It's going to be 4:30 at the Brez. Arts and Technology Academy of Pontiac versus Powama, Westphalia. Arts and Tech, they come into this with a 19-3 record. Powama, Westphalia, 16-2. Division 2, they're going to get theirs decided tonight. Semifinals tonight. Freeland versus Romulus Summit Academy North. That's at 5:30 tonight. They advance to the winner there will advance to the state final and will face either Detroit Unity Prep or Hudsonville Unity Christian. 7:30 tonight. That Division II state final at the Brez on Saturday at 6:45. And Division I, they get theirs figured out tonight too. Rockford versus Auburn Hills Avondale. Winner there will face either East Lansing or Bloomfield Hills Brother Rice. Noon and 2 o'clock tip times, respectively, in D1. That D1 state final is 12:15 tomorrow back at the Brez. On to Big Ten basketball. Yesterday in Big Ten, it was Ohio State University beating Iowa 72-69. So the Buckeyes advance. Wisconsin got a win over Washington 85-82. It was Purdue beating Northwestern 81-68. And UCLA getting past Rutgers 72-59. So today in Big Ten play, you've got Michigan taking on Ohio State University at noon. We'll have that for you. Our broadcast will be 11:30 here on News Talk 970 AM, 101.5 FM. So an abbreviated Talk Back Jackson with Captain Steve Boyle. At 2:30, Illinois will face Wisconsin. At 3:15, Nebraska will take on Purdue. And MSU in the nightcap, 9 o'clock tip time against UCLA. We've got the broadcast for you, 8 o'clock on Fox Sports 101.9 FM. So Michigan versus Ohio State University. The Wolverines are 12.5-point favorites. Matchup predictor has 84.6% in favor of the Wolverines. On the MSU side of things, as the Spartans, again, will be taking on UCLA in the nightcap tonight of the quarterfinals. Quarterfinals for the Big Ten tournament tonight. Semifinals tomorrow. And the finals will be on Sunday. So UCLA, 22-10 on the season. The Spartans, 25-6 on the season. Spartans are 5.5-point favorites on this one, 64.3% as far as the matchup predictor goes. On to the hardwoods of the association. Cade Cunningham. Now, the Pistons face what was left of the Philadelphia 76ers after numerous key injuries. Without Joel Embiid and Tariq, the Pistons rolled past the Sixers in a wire-to-wire 131-109 win. Cade Cunningham was a bit off, only 8 points in the scoring, making the first time in 2 years he didn't reach double figures in a game. However,
he helped facilitate to everyone else with 13 assists, helping the team record 7 scores in double figures last night. We've got some highlights for you. How about Reed with a layup in the second, 69-60?
Duncan Robinson, the forecourt. 2 seconds to play in the half, inside for Paul Reed, laid it in. It should count. It does.
And then an alley-oop to Duren. This is in the third, 71-60.
Oh! It's the forecourt, and a high lob for J.D., and he throws it down. Nice setup by Tobias. Super stuff for Jalen Duren.
Herder gets a tip in, 124-92. This is in the fourth.
The Pistons will bring it to forecourt. Spinning to the lane is Paul Reed. B-ball Paul with a hook. No. Tapped in by Kevin Herder. Herder now with a dozen. Pistons 124, Philly 92.
I love the George Blaha calls. He's the best, isn't he? Here's the final call.
The Pistons will bring it to forecourt. Crowd gives him a hand. The Pistons handled the Philadelphia 76ers. Our final score, the Pistons 131, Philadelphia 109. At one point, the Pistons had a 35-point lead.
Duncan Robinson, 19 points as he was 5 of 7 from deep. Jalen Duren, 14 points, 10 boards, and just 15 minutes on the floor. Pistons will now face the Grizzlies. That's at home tonight. Wings last night. Well, went about kind of what you'd expect. Without Kopp and Larkin for at least 2 weeks, they lost 4-1 last night. Let's check in with Ken Cal. He's got the recap for us.
Hi, this is Ken Cal. Gage Gonsalves scored 2 goals, leading the Tampa Bay Lightning to a 4-1 victory over the Red Wings last night in Tampa, Florida. Goaltender Andre Vasilevsky stopped 24 Red Wings shots as the Bolts recorded their 40th win of the season. JT Compher scored Detroit's lone goal in the third period. It came on a deflection. And Braden Point and Jake Guentzel also connected for Tampa Bay in the win. It was the first time the Red Wings lost back-to-back games in regulation since late November. The Red Wings remain in the first wildcard spot in the Eastern Conference. They have 79 points. And Boston remains in the second wild card spot with 78, but closing in on the outside looking in Columbus, 77 points, just 2 points behind the Red Wings in that wild card position. So things are tightening up. Again, the final score, Tampa Bay 4 and the Red Wings 1. The Red Wings now travel to Dallas to face off against the Stars on Saturday night. And catch all the action at 7:45 p.m. on the Detroit Red Wings radio network.
Tigers, they let one get away from them yesterday in spring training ball as they lost to the Stankies last night. Final there was 4-3 last night, yesterday afternoon. But there were some highlights. It feels like spring training highlights are few and far between, but there were a few. Let's go to the fifth. McKinstry getting a 2-run dinger last night for the Tigers.
Fly ball right field, way back in right and gone. Onto the runway. Zach McKinstry, an absolute no-doubter. And the Tigers are on the board, now trailing 3-2.
So that was after Dominguez got a dinger for the Stankies in the first, and then they got another dinger later in the first. And then another dinger in the second from Brown. So McKinstry went up there in a 3-0 deficit and put 2 runs on the board. And then Warwick gets a sac fly, ties it up for the Tigers in the eighth.
Jude Warwick, fly ball right field, and this should get a run home. In to make the catch, Torres tagging, coming home as Callahan, throw to the plate, up the line, slides in safely. Sacrifice fly. Tigers have tied it at 3. And again, the fun part of seeing the Tiger Town kids come over, they deliver here in the 8th inning to tie the game.
Yeah. And then we give them the game. We give them the win. It wasn't a walk-off walk, but it was the walk that won it.
3-2, high and tight. He walked him. Walk, single, hit batter, bases loaded walk. That produces a run for the Yankees to make it a 4-3 game.
And then here's the final call.
The strike one, swinging a ground ball to third, scooped up by Kent across the diamond to Moylan, and the Yankees beat the Tigers in Lakeland.
Yeah, you know, Tigers lose to the Stankies again. Tigers and Pittsburgh tonight, 6 o'clock for the spring training extravaganza there. And we'll have that for you on Fox Sports 101.9 FM. We'll be joining MSU in progress tonight as, again, they take on UCLA. So there it is. That's your sports, courtesy of Kettlebell Hotspot Sport and Fitness Center. This is AM Jackson.
You're listening to the AM Jackson Podcast with your host, Mark Daly.
AM Jackson on WKHM, Jackson's News Talk 970 AM and 101.5 FM, and online at WKHM.com.
At 16 minutes now after 7 o'clock, Brian Wheeler standing by from Consumers 4. We wine. Let's take a look at what's happening outside weather-wise, where we have that high wind warning in effect until 8 o'clock tonight. For today, we're looking at wind gusts to be over 50 miles per hour at times. Snow expected today, too. Cloudy skies and 43 degrees. We've got 1 to 3 inches of snow expected overnight. That could transition to rain and then freezing rain for us during the early morning hours. We've got cloudy skies, low of around 25 degrees. And then Saturday, cloudy, 42. Saturday night, more snow possible. That, you know what? That's where the 1 to 3 inches is for Saturday night. And then the freezing rain, overnight low of around 30 degrees. So windy conditions today, tonight, and then Saturday night into Sunday morning, a little bit of snow, maybe some freezing rain. Outside right now, we're at 33 degrees. And that's your weather forecast on News Talk 970 AM, 101.5 FM from WKHM.com/weather. Let's go to our newsmaker line. We welcome back to the program Brian Wheeler from Consumers Energy. Brian, good morning.
Hey, good morning to you.
Yeah. Things never seem to be slowing down this time of year for consumers, Brian. There's always something going on. It feels like we're getting press releases every week.
Well, we're trying to keep things interesting for
you. Well, thank you.
I hope you've got some stuff to work with from us.
I do, for sure. I certainly do. But, well, no, whenever we have, like, the severe weather rolling through, yeah, like we had last week and like we are anticipating for today, consumers really is, and has been for a long time, they really try to be proactive and get crews out in advance before the weather hits.
Yeah, I mean, the favorite expression I've been hearing this week is, you know, victory favors the prepared. And so the best we can do is to get a clear look at the weather and then, you know, make sure that we're ready, and then make sure that our customers, that you and I and everybody we serve, are ready too. So, you know, heading into, my goodness, you know, this is a weekend that covers it all when it comes to wintry, spring-type weather, snow, freezing rain, ice, hopefully not tornadoes again, right? But
right.
There's a lot in the forecast for the next few days. And so we've mobilized our crews. Over 450 crews are on duty today as we speak, actually, to start responding if we see power outages. And, of course, we want to make sure that people are preparing and thinking of their own safety.
When you say that, when you say preparing, the first thing that happens in the daily household is, hey, we got this, we see this popping up, blah, 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 whatever weather is. Go plug in your phones, everybody. You know, that's the thing that happens in the house. The very first thing, it's plug in the phones. And we usually make sure we've got some water on standby, too. But what does Consumers Energy suggest when it comes to preparation for households?
Yeah. It sure says something about how important our phones are to us, right? That is the thing to plug in. We do it too, so I'm not teasing you. I think in general, and even when the weather is good, that maybe is a good time to think about these things. You know, depending on your household, whether you've got furry friends, children, adults, the elderly, you know, folks who are senior citizens, you know, knowing your sort of family game plan, and I think that almost is like a tactical exercise. You know, what would we do if we lost power for, let's say it's Friday morning, you know, if we lost power for the day, you know, expect the power to come back later this afternoon? In our case, we'd probably sit tight and wait for things to improve and go about our days as best we can, maybe go to a local library. What do I do if I lose power overnight? You know, do I have a place I'm going to go do I have a bag I would take with me that's packed up for any emergency, let alone a power outage? And like you mentioned, water, you know, keeping water on hand. Do I have, you know, a food supply that I can turn to in a pinch? And most of us have that pretty well covered. And then to think through too, right? I see the weather forecast coming in. If I'm expecting outages when I go to bed, I might unplug that, you know, that 60-inch plasma screen TV just to make sure it's not affected if my power goes out or power comes back on. You know, unplugging or turning off power strips, for example, that link me up to computers and other perhaps more sensitive appliances. So we try to think of this just really in practical terms. You know, how do I expect to get through the unexpected?
And that's one thing that we never think of, and we probably should, because hey, lightning strikes, things happen, and that that TV that I'm going to depend on this weekend to watch Michigan spank everybody in the Big Ten tournament, I'm going to want to make sure that works. I get it.
Yeah, and I did forget actually one other thing that's very consumers energy specific too is our online outage map. I think everyone is familiar with it. It's a great piece of technology that, you know, that's been in place for a long time. But if you go to consumersenergy.com/outage center, beyond looking at the map, you can get more tips and advice from a more reputable source than just my lips. And also sign up for outage alerts. So we can provide you updates on your phone via email, text, phone call, that let you know where we stand. So the power does go out. You're at work, perhaps, and you're just not aware of what's happening back at your home. You'll get those outage alerts, and then we'll give you updates. You know, here's your restoration time. Here's if that restoration time has changed, or crews are on the way, or, of course, best of all, the power's back on. So I would say sign up today and every day to make sure that you're ready to have that information, because then you're empowered to make even better decisions.
And you can do that just by going to the consumer's website. Is there an app people should download? How's that work?
There is a consumer's energy app as well. I'm such an old school fuddy-duddy, I think website first, but you're right. You can download our consumer's energy app, or like I said, consumersenergy.com/outage center, consumersenergy.com, you'll find your way there. Mm-hmm. We have the information much more than we did a generation ago. That really helps people.
Okay. And I feel like most people understand, but we still have to say it. We still have to make sure that the safety messages are put out there. But I do feel like most people understand that when they see downed power lines, stay away.
It never gets old to repeat that, however. So, yes, let's think about that. Power line goes down on the ground. You see it come down or nobody's around. Stay away. Don't go toward it. Stay 25 feet away or what looks like a very, you know, safe distance. Call 911. That's your first phone call to make, because that's an emergency situation. Call 911 and then call Consumers Energy. Of course, you've got that number memorized, but if you don't, 800-477-5050. Okay. And that's going to be a great way to report. We send what we call wire guards, or we work with our local first responders to make sure that down power lines, which you always should imagine are energized and not safe to be around, that we get protection. We get somebody there. We tape them off, and we're watching to make sure that people stay away from a hazardous situation.
Right. Okay. So we're expecting windy conditions with our forecast here in our neck of the woods. It seems like the further north in the state we go, weather's going to be worse. But consumers, like we talked about, like we started, you've got crews spread out all over the place, especially in areas that you think are going to be some of the more impacted areas. And
we do.
And just ready. Now, when the weather's still bad, do crews get out while the weather is still weathering, or do they kind of wait for things to calm down a little bit before they try to get the power back on?
It's a great question, and depends on the situation. But if it is actively windy, and I forget the exact mile per hours, but if it's, you know, windy and gusty, it's often not safe to go up in those bucket trucks, as you can imagine. You don't want to be exposed to the elements there. So we will have to stay on the ground and have to wait for the initial wave of conditions to pass. But certainly when it's cold, even if there's, you know, a precipitation, that won't stop our folks. And so they're on call and they're reporting for duty. Actually, as we speak, there are about 15,000 customers really scattered out across the whole Lower Peninsula that are without power this morning as we speak. Wow. So those winds are blowing through already. And I'm certainly mindful, you'll remember that those tornadoes we had, Three Rivers, Union City. Yeah. At one point, those warnings, I believe, were calling for the tornadoes to hit Jackson as well.
Sure.
So, you know, this is that time of year where our part of the state is particularly sensitive to those fast changes in weather and temperature. that cause a lot of mayhem.
Yeah, we live in the southern part of the county, and there were warnings going off, if I remember correctly, from like the Somerset area. So we were getting those notifications because that's pretty close to us. So, okay. Anything left untouched here, Brian Wheeler from Consumers Energy, that we didn't talk about that we need to let our listeners be aware of?
As far as the weekend weather goes, again, be prepared, be safe. Know that we're also planning for the long term. I know we're really focused on this weekend, but we just made some information, shared some information this week about our long-term energy plan. We're going to be building a couple of natural gas power plants in the Bay region up by Saginaw and Flint and Bay City, and really looking to make sure that we've got that supply of energy that you need. So, you know, power comes from the power plants, and we're making sure those and solar and wind are all in place to serve our customers 24/7, 365. And then, of course, we're prepping and strengthening the system that delivers that energy to your home through the pipe, through the wires and the pipes of natural gas that serve you every day.
Now, refresh my memory, because consumers had had a goal, a certain percentage that they wanted to have renewable energy providing their customers. What was that? Can you remind me of that goal again?
Actually, the simplest thing to think about is 2040, and it'll be here before you know it, Mark. Time marches on. But the state's energy law that was recently passed a couple of years ago calls for 100% clean energy. And you think about this, we've closed most of our coal-burning plants over the last decade. We've transitioned a lot to natural gas, including our natural gas plant in Jackson that has far fewer carbon emissions than traditional coal plants. And then we are developing those new energy sources. The technology is changing every day. Solar is much more efficient, much more affordable than it was a generation ago. We see wind projects, including one in Hillsdale County, not too far from here, and battery storage, which when I joined Consumers Energy in 2013 was a real novel sort of idea, but large-scale batteries that allow us to capture energy that's generated and then provide it at the right time for our customers. Those are coming on fast too. So there's a lot that you're going to hear happening that we're talking about. We filed a plan. We're going to be filing a plan with our state regulators in a couple of months. We gave a bit of a preview of it this week. And then that process of approving and making sure that we're doing what's best for Michigan will last about a year. Mm-hmm. So you're going to see some headlines. I'm sure if you welcome me to do so, I'd love to talk to you more about it down the road, because preparing for the future is as big as it is, as big a priority as it is preparing for the weekend weather.
Well, I know, because I'm sure there's listeners out there who are concerned transitioning from our traditional source of energy to they're concerned about whether they're going to have as much power as they are typically used to. There's a lot of uncertainties, I'm sure, amongst that. So, yeah, if we could have you come on a regular basis as we navigate through this, I would appreciate it. And I know our listeners would as well. So looking forward to it.
And I think just to consider, nearly 2 million homes and businesses that we serve, the expectation, the standard is 24/7, 365. Anytime you flip the light switch, power up appliances in your home, your business, manufacturers, that you have the power you need, you count on it, it's there around the clock for you. That's always been the standard in the past. You know, sometimes Mother Nature gets a vote, but we work hard to protect our system and serve our customers well. That doesn't change going forward.
All right. Brian Wheeler, as always, we appreciate it from Consumers Energy. We appreciate the opportunity to have the conversation and informing our listeners. Thank you.
Thank you.
All right. We'll talk soon. Have a great weekend. Stay safe. You're listening to AM Jackson on News Talk 970 AM, 101.5 FM.
I'm Mark Daly, and you're listening to the AM Jackson Podcast.
Back to AM Jackson, live from the County National Bank Studio.
At 7:33 and a half, and we head to our newsmaker line. We welcome back to the program State Representative Kathy Schmaltz. Kathy, good morning.
Good morning. We're back to winter heavily.
Well, all right. You saw what's supposed to happen on Sunday, right?
Yes.
We're going to start off the day with snow and freezing rain possible, and we'll end the day at 63 degrees.
We wonder why we have sinus issues.
I get that. But the most important thing that I want to talk about with you here today, Kathy, is how come the Tigers cannot beat the Stankies?
Hey,
don't say it's just spring training. Don't say it.
I keep telling you, it's spring training. Don't worry.
I want wins. All right. I know.
Just wait till March 26th. That's the opening day, San Diego. Scuba will be pitching. Everything will be fine.
Okay. All right. I'm recording our conversation. I'm going to play it. I'm going to play it that morning. So
always an optimist. Right. Always an optimist.
Well, Kathy, just for our listeners' sake, I'm going to circle back to Michigan Theater News at the end of our conversation, if that's okay. Because you're still on the board there. But let's go ahead and let's talk about some of the stuff that's going on in the state. And we just had Brian Wheeler on from Consumers Energy, and our first point here to discuss is how you co-sponsored legislation to make energy more affordable. Tell us about this.
That's right. It's called Project Lighthouse. It's our new energy plan. And whenever we talk about energy, and I am on the Energy Committee, and I remember a couple years ago when they put in all these mandates, and the focus should always be on reliability and affordability. When you go to turn the lights on, they should turn on, and can you afford your utility bill? That's the bottom line. Mm-hmm. So this plan repeals what happened in 2023, the green energy mandates, that said we had to be all green energy 100% by 2040. It's great to want clean energy and work toward that, but you have to have a plan. You can't go from here to there mm-hmm. without a real plan, and that's where we find ourselves. With rates going up and the focus just on the wrong things. The Michigan Public Service Commission signs off on these projects, weighing political goals, we believe, instead of affordability and reliability. So under this plan, it's going to be not focusing on social policy trends that aren't working, but focusing on what we need to focus on. So the bottom line, new energy framework, engineers, not politicians, with certain agendas should be in charge. So it restructures utility planning, evaluating how the grid performs, demand during extreme conditions and other situations, cutting red tape, expediting approval of projects like tree trimming, for example, or replacing outdated equipment, updating technology. You need to quickly fix what needs to be fixed so the power stays on. It was taking too long to get the go-ahead on these projects. And finally, we want more transparency from our utility companies and the Michigan Public Service Commission. Mm-hmm. The cost of upgrades, storage, and so forth, there shouldn't be any surprises for people. So the new energy plan really focuses on transparency and cutting taxes. This goes along with our property tax cut plan to save families, you know, up to $1,400 a year. So that's what it's all about.
Mm-hmm. I feel like the concern is, as... Yeah, consumers has been talking about for quite some time now, transitioning from traditional form of delivering power to renewable forms. And the concern is it's going to become not as affordable, if we even want to say it's affordable in the first place. So is there foresight in this plan to be able to flow and adapt as consumers is adapting to how they provide the energy?
Well, you see, that was the problem. When you go from here to there quickly without a plan, it's going to cost more because you have these mandates put on to make sure everything is in place by certain times, and that's just not feasible. So we are working toward clean energy. Nuclear energy is coming back. That's very clean. And, you know, it's always there. It's very reliable. So we have to focus on the right things. We, like I said, we all want to work toward clean, renewable energies, but we have to do it smartly with a plan. Yeah. So it doesn't raise all the rates, and it doesn't put utility companies under the bind to get everything done at a certain time.
Right.
It just has to be done in a smart way. Also in 2023, the Democratic plan took local control away, giving the state, the Public Service Commission, the final say on where all wind and solar projects can be located. And we believe this was wrong. And in the Republican House, we already passed legislation giving local control back again. Of course, that is still sitting in the Senate. We'll see what happens with that one, too.
Okay. Well, yeah, we have Senate saying our bills are still sitting in the House. The House saying our bills are still sitting in the Senate. It feels like we're going to have a little bit of this back and forth going on this year, Kathy.
That's where all my bills are, sitting in the Senate right now. So we'll see what happens.
Okay. Well, I'll ask Sue Schenck about that on Monday if we can get any of those. She's not in charge of bringing them to the floor, but we'll see what happens.
No, okay. But I've been talking to them.
Okay.
So we'll see.
Tell us about youth transportation. What's this about?
This is really interesting. So sometimes parents make the difficult decision to put their child in a residential treatment center. Some professionals recommend that parents hire a youth transportation company or service to go pick up their child and take them to a treatment facility. These companies are obviously supposed to ensure a safe trip, but in many situations, it becomes really frightening and traumatic for the child. Some have been ripped from their homes in the middle of the night by these people. They don't, you know, they're being restrained, handcuffed, sometimes even blindfolded. It's a traumatic experience. Wow. And these young people, as we know, are already in crisis to begin with. So this happened to Paris Hilton. And she now advocates around the country for changes and regulations for this youth transportation company. She's expected to testify on a recorded video in my committee this week, Families and Veterans, to talk about all this. So when she was 16, she was taken in the middle of the night, thought she was being kidnapped, says she was terrified. She was handcuffed, carried out of the house screaming. She said, "I know my parents thought they were doing the right thing, but it wasn't." She suffered PTSD, post-traumatic stress disorder, for 20 years ever since this happened. I mean, you know, some they put a hood over her. I mean, it was really, really traumatic.
Yeah, that doesn't...
Can you imagine?
No, I can't. That's what you see in Taylor Sheridan's shows. You don't see that in real life with kids when you're trying to help them.
I know. Mm-hmm. So Rep. Cavett of North introduced a bill that says safety protections on these youth transportation companies. So it prohibits the use of blindfolds and hoods, bans mechanical restraints like handcuffs and chains, and it limits physical restraints except for emergency situations where somebody's going to be harmed. And it prevents nighttime pickups between 9 p.m. and 6 a.m.
Okay.
So this is really a good thing.
Right. Now, thinking about this as we're having the conversation here, because I know there's going to be those situations... It happens where parents are afraid of their kids, because there can be those who are going to be transported that are violent and have they're causing terror within the household. And is that what you're talking about in emergency situations where those type of things would be allowed?
Yes, let's say drug related,
right?
Where there's a big issue and it's very threatening, and either party could be harmed in the situation. They still can't use blindfolds or hoods. They can restrain them and in other ways just to get the situation under control.
Yeah, it sounds like there was a blanket policy on how to remove children, when really you only needed those measures for a select few, but. Okay.
But, can you imagine these people just coming in? You don't know them.
No.
They're trying to take you. I mean, this is horrifying.
Yeah,
for
sure.
In so many situations.
Well, previously we talked about our National Guard members and trying to ensure that their time off and pay is all handled appropriately. Tell us about this.
So this is a little bit different. This bill I just introduced will make sure when the state activates our National Guard, they will get paid by direct deposit or electronic transfer. So right now, when the National Guard has their training or drills, they get paid electronically or if the federal government calls them to action. But when the state activates the National Guard, let's say for the ice storm up north, the first check issued is a paper check. And that has caused problems for our National Guard members. They don't get their check. They're not at home addresses. The check is lost. It's been a problem. My bill changes this, so all payments to the National Guard from now on will be direct deposit or electronic transfer. The National Guard Association of Michigan has been asking for this for a while now, so I will be testifying on that bill in my committee this week.
Okay, so that is a little different. Okay.
Yeah.
You found yourself at J-High yesterday.
Yes, well, I wasn't there, but I did send Rachel.
Okay. You're one of your clones was at J-High yesterday. Okay.
We were still in session, and I couldn't get there as much as I wanted to, so a special celebration was held for Nathan Martin. We all know what he did. He won the Los Angeles Marathon and the race's closest finish ever. He's a substitute teacher and a Jackson High School cross-country coach, and they celebrated him yesterday. Students and staff cheered him on. Rachel, my regional person, brought our state tribute to Nathan. from my office recognizing his tremendous accomplishments. Congratulations. That was a big come-from-behind win for him.
That was insane. You saw the, I'm assuming you saw the video of it.
Yes.
That was insane.
He came out of nowhere.
So, right, 26.2 miles to run like that at the end of the race without anybody else chasing you. That is insane.
I know. Two hours, 11 minutes, 18 seconds. Just incredible.
Yeah.
Hey, you could do it, Mark.
I did a half marathon back in the day on the Falling Waters Trail, and I collapsed. I felt like junk the rest of the day. I did. It was half that. But that was
for you though. That's great.
Man, that was a long time ago. But that was nice to be able to recognize him, and that's going to be one of those photo type finishes. That video is just you're going to see that for the rest of your life. It'll pop up here and there. So that's something that we'll be able to see and recognize as Jackson being attached to that. That's pretty awesome.
Yeah, that was incredible. Mm-hmm. Absolutely incredible.
Yeah. Let's see. You also testified on some grant requests. What can you tell us about that?
Yes, well, Jackson City Police Chief Chris Simpson testified this week on a budget request. We're asking for funding to purchase two vehicles with updated traffic enforcement technology. So right now they don't have a traffic enforcement unit, and that causes problems, take patrols away from other assignments or calls. The department's 53 officers operate at minimum staffing levels, leaving patrol units to manage crash investigations, traffic enforcement, without the resources they need. Okay. So this money, $167,080, would provide two properly equipped vehicles with technology to enhance traffic enforcement, education, and crash reduction efforts. This will help improve safety for everyone, drivers, pedestrians, bicyclists, everyone on the road. Okay. It was great to have Chief Simpson up there with me testifying.
Yeah, it feels like we were having a lot of positive stories around testimony this year, especially when it comes to the goals of being more transparent. I feel like that's lending itself to more testimony, and we're hearing some more good positive types of requests and stories coming out of Lansing as a result of that.
Yeah, we're not hearing the $4,500 coffee makers and things that people were putting into the budget.
Yeah.
Now you have to have your name on it. It's got to go online so everybody sees what you're asking for. And that's really important.
Yeah.
Because it's going to cut down on things that we never should have been spending money on. So that was great. And our sheriff, Gary Schutte, was supposed to testify. Mm. And I'm sorry to say that he was sitting around for a couple hours as we were taking our time in session at the Capitol. And he will be coming back this week.
Okay.
to testify. So we'll get the sheriff in.
Well, look forward to getting the recap on that. All right. State Representative Kathy Schmaltz joining us here on AM Jackson. Kathy, can I pivot a little bit?
I said, whatever you want, Mark. It's your show.
Thank you. you're still on the board for the Michigan Theater, right?
Yep.
Okay. I had a member, not a board member, but a member of the Michigan Theater share their email with me, and it appears that the board is postponing what is supposed to happen this month is their annual meeting. And I know duties in Lansing kind of pull you away from some of the duties here in Jackson sometimes, but what can you tell us about this?
So I have missed both meetings this month. I'm on the executive committee and the board, and one was State of the State, and one was, what else did we have?
Testimony, I'm sure.
Yeah, we had testimony, and then, of course, the meeting this week, we had testimony again, so I couldn't get there. Mm-hmm. So I haven't been to a few meetings, but I did get the email because I am a member also of the theater. It is my understanding that according to the bylaws, you have to have the annual membership meeting during the month of March and February or March, depending on, but it has to be March. I mean, it has to be the end time. So I don't know what they're doing or why they're doing it. I haven't been there, but I've already received calls from businesses and members in the community and other people, and they're very upset about this, and supposedly something will happen. I don't know how they can do this. I just don't. I don't understand what they're doing.
Mm-hmm. And we've had business leaders on this show. We've even had reports from other business leaders. We've re-reported what they've told other sources. You know, there's institutions, there's donors who are saying, we're going to continue to support the theater, but we're just holding back right now. Mm-hmm. So there's really, I mean, I don't know how it impacts it immediately right now, today, but it looks like within the immediate future, there's going to be an issue with funds for the theater, just based on, you know, being generically obvious of businesses that are withholding their pledges and their donations. How big of a concern is this for the theater?
It's a great concern. It's a great concern. You know, some people have canceled events. Our donors and our companies in this community are smart. They know how important the Michigan Theater is to us. We just ran this big capital campaign, which nobody on the board helped with, by the way. Steve and I and community leaders and business leaders put this together and the community and did a wonderful job. The theater is very important. I would do everything I can to make sure this theater thrives and stays in good standing. We do not have that right now because we have a couple people on the board who is trying to run everything, and they are hurting the theater and destroying everything that we've built up. And like I said, our donors and companies are smart, and they are going to wait till we have the right leadership there and we get a couple of these people off the board to make sure that it's going to be run correctly.
Okay. Anything with the theater that maybe we haven't talked about that you feel is important for our listeners to know?
Not yet. We'll see what's going to happen with them not holding this meeting, which is obviously they're supposed to with the bylaws. So we'll find out. But the community is not happy.
If they don't have, if there's not a meeting in March, then what are the repercussions of that? What happens as a result of not having this annual meeting when they're supposed to?
Well, there are some business leaders and different people in the community that hope to take some type of action on this because it seems to be, I don't know, illegal maybe? I don't know. We'll have to find out what's happening with that. Members have come up to me saying, what is the deal? We all plan to go to the meeting. I've had numerous people come up to me, different leaders in the community say, I would love to be on this board. I want to set everything straight. So many wonderful people in the community, which would really help get everything on track. So let's just see what happens here. But there are things going on.
All right. Very good. State Representative Kathy Schmaltz joining us here this morning. All right, Kathy, Tigers need some wins.
That's right. What are you doing this weekend?
This weekend, I know my daughter's celebrating a birthday, so we've got some stuff around that. But I will be watching.
Happy birthday.
Yeah, I will be watching Michigan and Michigan State basketball for sure.
And I think there's a beer festival, maybe, and
there's that going on.
Shamrock Shuffle for the wise, so there'll be a couple things going on.
Oh yeah, there are a few things going on. So are you going to be?
But the birthday's important.
Are you making a showing at the Southern Michigan Winter Beer Festival this weekend?
Yes, I like to go around and watch everybody sampling everything. It's amusing.
Okay, are you do you'll have your tasting tokens?
No.
All right.
No, okay. I usually don't. Okay. I'm a lightweight.
Okay.
When it comes to that.
All right. State Representative Kathy Schmaltz joining us this morning. Kathy, as always, it's a pleasure. Thanks for being with us today.
Yeah, we'll see you, Mark. Have a good weekend.
You're listening to AM Jackson on News Talk 970 AM, 101.5 FM.
You're listening to the AM Jackson Podcast with your host, Mark Daly.
AM Jackson on WKHM, Jackson's News Talk 970 AM and 101.5 FM, and online at WKHM.com.
At 7, and you know what? We're going to flip that. 18 minutes now past 8 o'clock on News Talk 970 AM, 101.5 FM, and we head to our newsmaker line. We welcome to the program Hunter Sullivan, Sullivan's in Jackson. Hey, Hunter, good morning. Welcome to the show.
Good morning. Thanks for having me. I love it.
Well, we're glad to have you here. And, of course, we are approaching that time of year where everybody has a little bit of green in them. St. Patrick's Day just around the corner. And we were talking a little bit before we got started here, Hunter, and it sounds like Sullivan's is going to be the place to be to celebrate St. Patrick's Day.
Yeah, well, we're really excited. Obviously, this has been a big holiday for my family. And you know, it's something that I love celebrating even as a kid, obviously in a different way, but we love hosting St. Patrick's Day, and I've been kind of waiting for this for a long time.
Yeah. So what can we expect this it starts this weekend, right?
It starts this weekend. Yeah. We wanted to host a practice day, I guess, if you will, on Saturday for all those people that are going to have to work on Tuesday and, have to miss out on the major festivities. But we wanted to at least share a little bit for the people that, might not be able to get out during the week. So, starting tomorrow night, we will have our food specials and our drink specials going, a little amuse-bouche, I guess, if you will, of live, Irish music and a little, halfway through party, all the way to St. Patrick's Day. We're actually going to host our specials and our drink specials starting tomorrow evening at 5 o'clock all the way until St. Patrick's Day and host it all day Tuesday as well.
All right. So let's start with the drink specials. What are the drink specials that Sullivan's will be having on St. Practice Day?
So there's going to be a lot of cocktails that are going to be special that a lot of the bartenders have whipped up. They're way too many to name.
Okay.
The main things are going to be your traditional, your Guinness, your Killian's, your green beer, and a lot of stuff sponsored by, Daniel Jacobs and a lot of the other beer distributors that have been so great about making sure that we don't run dry on this
for sure
sacred holiday.
Right. Okay. Now, food specials.
Food specials, yeah. So there is a few Irish dishes that are going to be on special, but they're actually on our everyday menu, like bangers and mash and the shepherd's pie, and obviously the Reuben. But we're going to have corned beef and cabbage, basically every day, all the way to St. Patrick's Day. And it's my own recipe of corned beef and cabbage. So we put a little unique twist on it, add a little smoke to it.
Okay.
And we also are going to have like a Reuben pizza. We're going to have corned beef and hash in the mornings, especially on St. Patrick's Day. We're going to have a classic. You can have a lot of classic breakfast items as well, but obviously we're going to be most excited about that corned beef and hash. You can come enjoy a beer and have that starting 7 a.m. on St. Patrick's Day.
Wait. You said something that my mind stopped, and I felt like maybe, I needed to elaborate a little bit more on. What is a Reuben pizza, Hunter?
Oh, Reuben pizza? It's great. It's a deconstructed Reuben right there on a pizza.
Okay.
It starts with a garlic butter base, and then you add just a lot of good sweet and salty corned beef on it, some cheese, a little bit of sauerkraut, and you drizzle that with a 1,000. And, you ain't going to regret it. It's something that, honestly, those are the funky pizzas, the ones that I seem to enjoy the most.
Wow.
What I mean? They just make things a little different.
That sounds, I'm just putting it out there. Haven't tried it yet, but it sounds epic. It sounds epic.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. All right. Hey, tell me about some of the, you said Irish music, Irish entertainment. Tell me about some of the entertainment you have coming.
So we got lucky to get one of the coordinators up there by Michigan State. From Lansing. Uh-huh. His name's Robert McCoy. He's the Irish String Trio Band, our Irish Town String Trio Band. Really nice, classic Irish music. It's got a lot of gigs and reels, and it sounds great. I mean, he's going to come in on Saturday night, and he's going to come back at noon on St. Patrick's Day.
Cool.
We've got a couple of locals that are going to be, kind of filling in the time in between. Obviously, the radio is going to be there. Hosting them, but then we're going to basically fill out the rest of the day, round out the evening with Railcar Graffiti, another great Celtic-style band, a little bit more up-tempo and, I guess a little bit more towards the, I like to say Celtic rock, but they're going to be there on St. Patrick's Day starting at 4, okay. and they'll take us into the evening, and then hopefully if there's anyone still left standing, we'll clear them out, so...
All right, so because Sullivan's also has Mallory's, which is kind of on the backside. People traditionally would remember the as the pizzeria with the Hun Club. So, are there two different things happening in the two different places, or is there division between the two? What's happening?
So the nice thing that's we're going to try to create at Sullivan's is going to be you're going to be able to walk into the main building, and you're going to hear all the live music, and fill the whole entire restaurant with people. Since the last couple of years, it seems to be looking in the forecast that it's going to be low 20s.
Right.
So we'll be able to fit everybody in there. But we wanted to host in Mal's Pub on the back part where, you know, the old pizzeria was. We've turned it into essentially an old Irish pub.
Okay.
Where people are going to be able to go there and enjoy, you know, a pint and, you know, get to feel like they're maybe not in Jackson for a few minutes.
That sounds cool. That sounds really cool. You know, one of the things that Jackson people like to do is we like to call things by their old name. You know, still people are calling the crossing the plaza, you know. We still call Cascades Manor the Manor House. Are you experiencing that still? Are people coming in and or making reservations or wanting to know what's happening at the Hunt Club? Or because you guys have done a great job rebranding it, and it certainly stands out. But are you still kind of coming across some of the people wanting to call it what it used to be?
Oh, yeah, for sure. Mm-hmm. And that's something that, you know, myself and my wife and I or the staff, it doesn't bother us in the least. You know what I mean? I've never been a, you know, real big, you know, thing to let those little things,
right,
you know, get hung up on those types of details. You know, even with West Texas, it's just been, hey, you know, this is something new, but hey, we, you know, we want to honor the tradition. We want to honor what people remember. That's what makes the building great, and that's what makes everything, you know, special. I mean, the reason we were so excited about purchasing the Hunt Club was because of the building. I mean, it's gorgeous. The staff's been great. There's been, you know, 40 years of memories there that, you know, people, you know, love and, you know, want to talk about, and we're happy to have that. We just always, you know, the you know, whole reason where we do the rebranding is to let them know, hey, yeah, there's you know, a new crowd in. We, you know, we want to welcome everybody. We want, you know, we want the old, we want the new, we want everything in between. You know, this is a place that hopefully will be around for another 40 years.
Mm-hmm. Hunter, as always, anything left untouched before we kind of run out of time here, Hunter?
No. Okay. You know, just like I said, it's going to be, it looks like it's not going to be the most favorable day out there. So for St. Patrick's Day, and it maybe even tomorrow, it kind of looks like it's going to be a little dreary. So you know what? Come on out, enjoy a holiday. Hopefully, we're going to kick off our first annual St. Patrick's Day party, and it's going to be in the books for, you know, years and years to come. Make it
for sure.
Hopefully, your new tradition.
Well, I love how you're labeling it St. Practice Day.
Saturday and Sunday. It's gonna be tomorrow. Fun,
for sure. All right. Hunter, as always, man, thanks for joining us. We appreciate it, and hope it's a wonderfully successful weekend for you, and we'll talk again here real soon, okay?
All right. Thank you, Mark.
All right. We'll talk to you. That's Hunter joining us here today. Sullivan's St. Patrick's Day. You're listening to AM Jackson on News Talk 970 AM 101.5 FM.
I'm Mark Daly, and you're listening to the AM Jackson Podcast.
Back to AM Jackson on WKHM, Jackson's News Talk 970 AM and 101.5 FM.
At 8:34 and a half, and we make our way to our newsmaker line, and we welcome back to the program Tom Knutson joining us. It's time for the Knutson's Outdoor Report. Tom, good morning.
Good morning, Mark. How are you?
I'm doing very well. And Tapio did a fabulous job sitting in last week, and I feel like I picked his brain enough on ice fishing. Now I just have to retain that information for next year.
Yeah, he knows a little bit about it.
Yeah, I know. And he had a successful ice fishing season. And have you guys been able to have that bluegill fish fry yet?
We've had one.
Okay.
There'll be more.
So there will be. I know there will be. So, yeah, and kind of like we've been talking the last couple times, ice fishing season definitely behind us now. But, I mean, can you characterize this?
For sure. But if you want to, you can still do it.
Okay. All right. Well. All right. Let's talk about that in a second. But can you characterize for us, I mean, was it, in your opinion, was it a good season? Was it an average season? Was it, I mean, how was the ice fishing season for you, Tom?
Well, as far as sales goes, it was a touch below average.
Okay.
We had the beautiful ability to be on ice before Christmas.
Mm-hmm.
And it had interest really high, and then we lost it.
Yeah.
We lost that ice. And then we went, you know, almost 3 weeks without ice again before we got it back, and it came back strong. It came back phenomenally strong as far as the thickness of ice, but we lost the momentum from the Christmas run into till when we got it back. We should have had three just absolutely killer weekends, and we had one monster weekend, and the rest were just eh. And then for the rest of the season, it just faded downhill after that. So it is what it is. It's better than not having ice. Don't get me wrong. There's no complaints.
Yeah.
It's just what we saw, as far as what happened.
Yeah.
And I'm starting to hear, everybody's kind of has the same feel all the way across the ice belt. It was good, but it wasn't great.
Well, it seemed like they were hitting well that first week. And then once, it melted and then it came back, it felt, obviously I don't have the chops that Tapio does, but it felt like it was more of a struggle. It was still fun. A lot of fun to get out there, hang out with the guys, go ice fishing. They just weren't hitting as hard.
I wish I had an answer.
Yeah.
Actually, I'm just talking to the clam sales representative here this morning and just having a conversation with him. And fishing was tougher.
Mm-hmm.
No, there's no doubt about it, but it didn't feel like anybody had the time to really put in the effort to go find the fish either.
Okay.
Everybody I seen went to the easy spots.
Right.
And those easy spots get picked off pretty quick.
Okay.
So, I'm just going to give an example. You always hear stuff on Lake Columbia, but I didn't hear people hitting everywhere on Lake Columbia.
Okay.
They hit the easy spots. They didn't hit the, they didn't go exploring. Nobody really seemed to explore. They didn't seem to have the time to explore.
Okay.
I guess maybe, they would go out once a week or twice a week. So they would go to where they heard there might be a hot spot,
right,
as opposed to going to look for themselves and finding their own hot spot. Which takes time. They didn't want to waste time looking. So there's a lot of that type of stuff. There's a lot of wise maybes. Maybe wise. We didn't see it because we had the ice.
Yeah.
I mean, we had we had the ice. It was a very solid ice year.
And, sure.
Compared to the year before, I felt we had a longer period of time, but we just didn't. It just didn't add up to what it should be. But that's fine. That is, things change, just a lot of different things.
So. We've had years where we couldn't get out, or we've had years where we just had maybe one or two weekends. So we had opportunity last year. We had opportunity this past season. So it's been a good couple seasons, my opinion, my assessment. It's been a good couple seasons to get out.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And we'll see what interest bring. This interest from this year, we'll bring into next year.
So people can still travel to find ice. Are we talking about up north? Are we talking about out west? Where are people going?
Up north, and out west.
Okay.
They're still there. So there's still ice out west, still ice up north. I just talked to somebody in Harrison, and north seems to be okay yet. Seems to be able to get on at least yet.
All right.
And obviously with these cold temperatures we got the rest of this weekend, it's not going anywhere anytime soon.
Yeah, make sure you take your anchors out there with you too, because you don't want to be the dude in the video chasing your shanty down across the ice on the wind.
Absolutely.
Right? All right, Tom. Hey, are we turning our attention then to walleyes on the Detroit River, to steelheads, or where's our attention going next?
Well, yep, that's exactly where everybody's heading with the mentality. I see that they're already fishing on the Maumee, and they're trying to work the Detroit River. Obviously, we're not in the big run yet, but there are guys catching fish on the Detroit River. They still got some ice flows here and there that'll be popping through. But every week that'll be getting better. Not hearing too much on Erie yet, but I see some pictures coming out of Maumee with the early fish. They're not big; they're small fish. So and then the west side, the steelhead are starting to, starting to do their thing. There's a lot of water going through the system. They got snow again today, so we'll see every week it's going to get a little better on that neighborhood.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. I had there was a DNR report about the lake levels in the Great Lakes being lower this year. I'm not sure how much I buy into that, because we've had a lot of precipitation. We've had a lot of snow, more snow this year than we've had in other years. And I just have a hard time feeling that the lake levels are lower.
Well, I 100% believe that they were lower. I saw them last fall. Before we froze over. So you got to remember, we lose a lot of what we lose a lot to. We lose a lot of evaporation in the wintertime, especially when they're not covered. And they were covered more this year, but they still lost a lot. That water, that you know, that snow is melting now and getting into the rivers, which is making their way to the lakes. It's going to take a while for it to level off. My guess is you won't see what the real situation is till mid-June. Okay. If you take a look at the fields around here, there's a lot of standing water floating around here. The lakes, I think, are going to come up, you know, are starting to come up to where they should be. I think we're getting close to a normal, not to above normal, but to a normal level of water. You know, we were so dry last year. That's why the EHD with the deer showed up, and those places now look to have water back in them. So, you know, now the question is, can we maintain that till next fall?
Okay. All right. So, I mean, so it doesn't sound like you're overly concerned about levels
at the Great Lakes.
Okay.
And as my statement, you know, we've talked a little bit about it. I think with the Lake Great Lakes being lower this year, that last fall, I think that's why we had a better winter. It's that much less water that needed to be cooled when we did start cooling down, and we were able to get the freeze, you know, that we needed once that happened. So we'll see. We'll see if that theory holds correct, but I kind of watch that stuff a little bit. It's like, oh, it seems like on the drier years, the water levels down years, but we seem to have better winters.
Yeah. So. All right. Now, I know people can get their licenses, their fishing licenses online, but me, Tom, it's like I have a, you talk about collection of hats for your buck pole. I have a collection of sleeves for my fishing licenses from Knudsen's, you know, they're all the same. They don't change that much from year to year, but I love getting it and having it in hand and keeping it with my gear when I'm fishing, Tom. So now's the time to get to start thinking about renewing your license at Knudsen's.
Absolutely. You can come get them, and all of the 2026 stuff is available except for the stuff that you need to sign applications.
Okay.
I think Monday you should be able to get your turkey permits over the counter.
Okay.
From what I understand, the stuff that if you applied for turkey permits, you can come get those now because those drawings have been done. So. Yeah, all that's available. You have to do it starting April 1st. So,
right.
Your old license is good till April 1, but get the jump on it, and we can take care of you now.
I know. I went back in December when I transitioned my stuff from my summer fishing gear to my winter gear. I went to go grab my license, and I pulled that stack out. I got that little thing that I carry all my Yamamotos in, and that's where I keep my license. And I pulled my thing. I pulled out like half a dozen different licenses there, and I had to figure out which was the one I was supposed to take with me ice fishing. But, yeah, it was...
Yep, the blue one. This year's yellow.
This year's yellow. Okay.
Yellow is the color this year.
All right. What else, Tom, going on with Knudsen's that we should be talking about with our listeners
here today? The store is getting converted. You know, the store is pretty much converted. Stuff's starting to roll in for, you know, open water.
Yeah.
We've got, you know, we're doing a couple little minor changes on where stuff is located in the store. Okay. We're changing our steelhead stuff around. And let's see, turkey stuff is coming in as well. We've got, you know, the conversion on that's done, so we've been busy.
Yeah.
And we're getting, you know, the merchandise is starting to roll, so you know how that works, all the way till July 4th.
Yeah, no kidding.
So we got a long way to go.
Right.
But, you know, the stuff starts rolling in now.
I know. And this is that kind of time of year where the cabin fever is really starting to set in, because, you know, we're not ice fishing. A lot of people are waiting for the weather to turn even more to be able to do open water fishing. And, you know, we're antsy. We're antsy for the sunny, warmer days, Tom.
Well, yeah. And what happens is when you hit 70 degrees in March, and then it doesn't turn 70 and everybody disappears because they go back in the house because they won't come back out till it's 70 again.
Right. Yeah.
I've seen it over and over and over again. They get antsy, then, oh, it's gone, and now it's winter again. And, you know,
well,
I can't go outside until it's 70 again.
Well, look at what's happening on Sunday. We're going to have snow and freezing rain in the morning, 63 for the afternoon. We just got those crazy swings. It happens every March and April. We get those crazy swings in weather.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. March is our, that is our wild, crazy month. You know?
Yeah.
In like a lion, out like a lamb, or you know, vice versa, depending on what it is. How would you like to have been in North Dakota last night? At the same time, they had severe thunderstorm warnings. I think they even had tornado watches. They had blizzard warnings.
Oh, man.
They had red flag warnings for fire, and they had 90-mile-an-hour gusts.
Oh, man, that's like a tornado.
All in one state at the same time.
That's insane. Well, it happens. It does happen. It's all right, well, stay safe with the weather this weekend, Tom, and we look forward to talking with you next week.
All right, Mark. Talk to you soon.
Tom Knutson joining us with the Knutson's Outdoor Report. You're listening to AM Jackson on News Talk 970 AM, 101.5 FM.
This has been the AM Jackson Podcast. Tune in live weekday mornings from 6 until 10 at News Talk 970 AM, 101.5 FM, and online at WKHM.com.